CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 47 with Dr. Ashwin Agarwal. What is our future in ophthalmology? Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. Today I have a very special guest, Dr. Ashwin Agarwal from India. Ashwin is an amazing young surgeon. I love watching his videos and I love learning from him. He's very innovative in the way that he thinks. He's also probably the hardest working man in ophthalmology. He works incredibly hard. I've seen him on so many different countries and around the planet last year. Plus, he works and does a tremendous amount of surgery and runs a huge empire. Ashwin, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Uday. Thank you so much for having me. And, you know, Cataract Coach has been a guide to not just me personally, but I think so many people. You can just see from the number of subscribers you have on your YouTube channel. Now you're going to Instagram as well. So it's just flowing everywhere. It's a beautiful concept. And I know that you do this for free, which is such a noble cause. For sure, your name will be etched in the memory of time.
You know, it's funny. Thank you. That's very sweet of you. But I actually do it so that I can learn. That's the most amazing part.
That is also true. But it's still not many people who do that.
It's a lot of work. If you make one video, it takes a lot of time. If you make one video every single day, that becomes really just quite a big lot to ask.
Yeah.
So tell me about, you've had an amazing path in ophthalmology. You're my favorite. From when you're on the podium, wow, you present such interesting cases, novel approaches, and you do it in such an easy way that makes it easy for me to learn. But you obviously, you weren't always in ophthalmology. How did you get into ophthalmology? I know it runs in the family, but tell me about your path.
So thanks for asking me that today. I think it's a very privileged question, actually. Why I say privileged is because I've been quite privileged in the way that my family's been in ophthalmology from my great-grandfather, Stanford, probably fourth generation of ophthalmology in my system. And that being said, obviously the company perspective, we started in the third generation, so that my grandfather started the company with his wife, my grandmother, and it's been flowing down two generations from there. That being said, why I say privileged is because a lot of people do not get the platform that I've probably had the fortune to be born in this family. And whatever comes and whatever goes, that is the baseline and the bottom line of it. To be honest, I've been lucky to be born in this family. I've been lucky to be born at an age where I saw only ophthalmology running around me at all times, on all dinner conversations. And everything was how important that small 24 mm is for all of us. And that's how important it becomes for us. Obviously, as you grow up and you enter your stages where you have to take a career path or a choice, a really nice blinder comes on from your parents, and they make you look in a particular direction, and they actually make you think. But fortunately, I think for me, what happened is it came about, those blinders came about in a very nice and soft way. So it didn't really feel like a blinder. But it was a blinder. Okay, let's just.
Well, want to make sure that you don't do orthopedic surgery, right?
We talk about this a lot. The so-called the word nepotism in its own way, but to a large extent, it's easy. It works. Can be taught very simply and fast to the next generation. Because you've got this thing, and if you have a platform, you can take it to the next level. Fortunately for us, it not just from a clinical standpoint, but also from a business standpoint, we were able to expand both the horizons on all the fronts. How I got into ophthalmology. It's basically a blinder.
And now looking back, best decision ever?
Absolutely. So to be honest, Uday, a lot of times, we are actually posed with this thought process that we have to do what we love. We have to do what we believe in and what we, But what I've started to realize a lot, and I tell a lot of the youngsters nowadays, don't go after what you love because you may not be good at it. Okay.
Right.
Don't go after what you believe in because you may not find your love after 5 years. But if you find something that you're really, really good at, just follow that.
Right.
Because that eventually your peers, there's no comparison to peer pat on the back. When a peer pats you on the back and says, hey, that's really nice. That's really nice. And that's, you know, something which you just said in the beginning of this podcast
right.
was, I really love what you say and how you say. And quite often I'm very humbled by that same terminology. But I just look at it from a new youngster. If I was 25, 28, you know, getting into this field, what would I tell myself? I'd say, if I find something I'm really good at, I'd say, do that. And just keep doing that.
Right,
if you
right.
do it long enough, people will just see through it and they will really cherish you for what choices you took at that point of time. It's a simple thought process which really has helped me. But
no,
I
think
hope it helps somebody else.
Oh, for sure. It makes a lot of sense. If you're very good at something, the interesting part is then you end up loving it. If you're so good at it, you love it.
I'll give you a different connotation to that. It's actually people are looking for recognition. And
right.
the only way to get recognition is actually if you're good at something. If you're good at something and you keep doing it, you will automatically get recognized by not just your peers, your patients, your
yeah.
customers, your investors. I don't know who's watching this podcast, but everybody will watch this and have that same feeling. If you have young kids, please, you know, tell them that. Do something which you're really good at.
Right. Well, my kids are smart because they don't ever listen to me. So that's why they're smart. And so I just like, I let them do their own thing. You guys, I trust their judgment. So, but I think you make a very valid point. I mean, I love cataract. I mean, I'm cuckoo for cataract.
Yep.
And so for me to say, oh, make a video every day. Okay, I don't mind. Or I mean,
yeah.
I watch 10, you know, cataract videos a day. And so when you love something and you're good at it, the combination, you just do it all the time. You get better and better.
You do it all the time. Yep.
Right. It's like the analogy I give is that, like, it's like that one kid in school who just loves basketball.
Right.
He has, when he goes home, he plays basketball. On TV, what does he watch? He watches basketball. When he reads the newspaper, what does he read about? The basketball game. When he plays video games, what does he play? A basketball video game. When he talks to his friends, when he talks about basketball. So when it's like, it's so all encompassing. It sometimes seems like unidimensional, but you just get so involved. It's become so in depth. You become amazing at it. So I agree with you. I mean, my passion too is obviously ophthalmology and cataract surgery. But, you know, when I'll tell you something interesting. When I was in residency, and in our U.S. residency, at the beginning, the first year or two, you're mostly in the clinic seeing patients. You're not doing much surgery.
Right.
I was really bored. So I started taking the MBA business classes in the evenings.
Right. Right.
Because I just can't do this clinic. I will not be happy doing, you know, clinic all day, every day, the rest of my life. And
right.
then somewhere in the middle of a residency, I started doing surgery. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this I love.
This is what
I'm really, I just, whatever reason, I'm really good at it.
Yep,
so
it
went from there.
It went from there. Perfect. That's
yeah.
that's a really good journey. That journey is, it shows, you know, clean, clear thought process, and it changes. It pivots. You pivot at different times. You suddenly find your calling and then you follow that.
Right. You're right about the pivoting too, right? Yeah, and that's
yeah.
an important thing too. Even during the course of the career, don't
yes.
feel like you have to keep doing the same thing.
Evolve with time. Evolve with what's happening around you. Evolve with what your passions could change. And
right.
don't just be committed to overcommitted to something that was a passion 10 years back. It could change. Just go with the flow, and you
right.
have to be in flow state, as they call it, right? At most
yeah, the state of flow. Absolutely.
Yeah, flow.
So tell me
You're
about
not
your
deciding.
Path. Tell me about your
Sorry.
Path. Then. So now you, how do you spend your typical week or your typical month? You work so hard.
So yeah, I mean, I don't work that hard as much as you. Let me be honest, and definitely not not even close to what my dad works. So there's no way that we should I can compare to all of you. But yeah, it's a pretty my easy week would be I would do close to about 50 or 60 cases a minimum. I would say you could go a little bit above on a heavier day on a in a week. And I spend most of my morning hours doing the OR. I don't see clinic too much, but since I run also a big network of eye hospitals across India and Africa, I'm also committed to standardization and protocol creation for and governance of that piece of the of all the other network. And that becomes a little larger part of my second half of the day, which is predominantly running around the clinical affairs for the group, whether it be the governance or whether it be product analyzation, or it be education of other doctors inside the group, or it be even research and development now has become a very big part where we're doing a lot of trials as well across our group. We have about 10 sites, so all of them running different trials at different points of time. So a lot of that amalgamation, drawing from inspiration, obviously from my dad, who's been doing this for a while, but I just helped institutionalize it so that it can become a more strategic affair, so that when we are not there, it still runs without any of us actually being there. Hopefully that system will prevail at some point 5, 7 years from now. It's been 6 years since we institutionalized a concept inside the company called as the clinical board. And the clinical board basically makes strategic decisions, not a day-to-day operational decision, but a strategic decision in terms of guidelines of what kind of protocols we should employ, what kind of conferences we should be organizing, what kind of events, webinars we should be doing, what are the research projects that we should take up, both internal as well as external, what is the kind of products that we should allow into the system. And there's a lot of that stuff that really happens on the clinical board side. And obviously, you know about the conferences that I go for. And a lot of that conferences is so one of the things which I think is important is to find a niche for yourself which you love. Like you found niche for yourself in love for cataract surgery, right? When you present yourself, I can just see that you're just talking with, you don't even need to think when you're talking. You just speak because it comes out so easily, and it's because you're doing it every day. And the same happened to me when I was doing complex or complications or complex surgeries, challenging cases. So when those started to come in a lot, I started to find myself, I fell in love with that side of things and loved taking care of something which, you know, initially it's actually, this is a very important part. Initially, I wanted to start taking care of my own complications. Obviously created some in the past, and I did not want to hand it over to somebody else and do a substandard work, which I was seeing happen, you know. And so I started to take those complications. I said, you know, I will learn this from the ground up. So I went into retina for 6, 8 months. I learned retinal surgery. I learned how to do a macular hole. I learned how to do a retinal detachment, and then learned basically how to deal with vitreous. Although I don't do retina, but I do deal with the vitreous a lot, even today. So that being said, then I learned corneal surgery. I learned DMACC. I learned DMACC from Frank Price. I went. I did. We started off learning PDEC with Dharmender Dua. You know, from Rwanda, we came back. We started institutionalizing it. So that happened. So a lot of those combinations went into complications of cataract surgery. All these what I'm talking about are pretty much around the cataract surgery side, but they are complications of them. Now I'm, you know, going into MIGS as well. So I love learning new things and adding to the repertoire. In this year, I mean, not I'm not talking Jan, but from April to now, I've done about 40, 50 odd MIGS procedures already. I'm hopefully plan to ramp that up. But I'm just saying the idea is to keep learning and never stop. Never
Yeah,
stop that learning
for
process.
sure. This is the fun of learning. I mean, anything
Absolutely.
you learn at the beginning, it's so fascinating. It's so much fun to learn. So I think we're all in that same boat. I think you've had some amazing training. Like, well, the one thing I wish I had more of was I didn't have any formal retina training. And so today, if a patient needs a three-port parts plan of vitrectomy, I'm more than likely going to ask one of my former residents, who is now a retina specialist, just do it for me. Because I don't
know. And I agree with that, Uday. I don't want anybody to hear this recording and say, hey, today I will do a retina surgery. You know, it should not be the case. It's honestly, retina deserves its own respect, and it takes time to do that. It's something that I don't recommend to everybody to do. In fact, if you have the option to have a retina surgeon, please have them do it. I just thought I could do it, so I did it. And at that point, I was also a little bit of a eccentric character to kind of go ahead and do all of this stuff in one time. But it all helps at the end when you understand sanity and you come down.
For sure. Like you have some very, very, very complicated cases where in order to fix the cataract or do the anterior segment surgery, you may have to do a vitrectomy. You may have to do also a combination with DMEC. You may have to do a mixed procedure. So it's nice to have all that in your tool set in order to do these very complicated cases.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree with you.
So now we also must mention, when you say you run your group of hospitals, this is not some like small organization. This is a mega organization. I mean, how many hospitals are there?
So, thanks for asking that. I think we've started off with one hospital. I'll give you the story a little bit. Off with one hospital in about 2000, from 1957 till about 2006, we were only one hospital. Just one hospital growing vertically. After which, we started to expand that using debt. And we grew that to about 22 hospitals within the state of Tamil Nadu. From 2006 to about 2011, at which point we maxed out our debt and we couldn't do any more debt. So that's when we went in for private equity and we started expanding with private equity. Today, from one hospital in 2006 to today, we've done 2-3 rounds. So we've now reached about 161 centers or a little bit around that number.
Wow.
Multiple countries, about 9 countries now. We've spread in Africa, all of East, South, and 2 countries in North Africa. That's where we've spread. We've also in India, we are in about pretty much all the states except for a few. So we've spread pretty widespread across the country. And the vision is probably to go to about 250 by end of next year. And that is 2025. So that's the thought process. But again, time will tell. And there's no number gunning to our head. We don't have a gun to our head in any which way for that to happen. We just want to do excellent work. And we want to be, you know, a sort of analogy to this is we want to be the Apple of eye care.
I love the idea. I love the passion. And wow, what a growth trajectory. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it must be 1 million patient lives or more per year that are treated.
Yeah, you know, so we do close to about 100,000 patients in terms of OPD a month. And we do about 100,000 surgeries through the year at any point of time, and probably increasing. I'm giving you old numbers, to be honest.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know the exact number as of now.
That's
too soon to tell.
Fantastic. That's just, I mean, the nice part is you think, gosh, how many people have you helped? It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a big network, and we've been fortunate to have some fantastic doctors, to be honest. It is not possible to have some fantastic doctors. And I would also say, to have some really good, sharp minds working on the back end, because a network like this cannot work with just the doctors front ending. This has to be a network led by professionals who've done scaling up of businesses and so on and so forth. Obviously, this needs a little bit of a gray area where you have clinic on one side and then you have the the management on the other side. So to give an analogy, you have the management board and then you have the clinical board for the group. It is in comparison to a management board of a newspaper company and an editorial board of a newspaper company.
Right.
So they don't think alike, but although they have to work together. The management will say, cut the cost. The clinical will say, hey, let's increase that. You know, we want to give the best quality. So it's a good mix to get the best out for everybody.
Yeah, it sounds like you need to have a good balance between the business side and the physician side in order to really, you know, have that parity.
And I'm sure that everybody watching your podcast is in the same boat. They're just probably doing it at a smaller scale, mid-scale, and large scale. That's all.
No, for sure. Obviously common issues. Now, are you operating just in one center or you travel and operate many centers?
Right now, currently, post-COVID, I've been operating only in one center. But pre-COVID, I was operating in about six centers, five of them being in Africa, actually.
Wow.
I was traveling to Africa a lot. I was, for 5.5 years, I traveled to Africa. I went to Rwanda, I went to Mozambique, I went to Zambia, I went to Ghana, and I went to Mauritius. So these were the places I went, and I was helping in those locations for, doing really high-end, sophisticated anterior segment transplant type of procedures.
Right.
Not even transplant, I would say reconstruction work.
So the centers would just save these very difficult or challenging cases for you and kind of build them all up.
There was a pooling up of patients that used to happen because it was impossible for them to come to India or anywhere else. And so I used to go there, I used to do those cases and come back. And it would be it started about 7 a.m. in the morning and we would go straight up to 5 a.m. next day.
Oh my goodness.
It was marathon of sorts. And at some point during that journey, about 2 o'clock or so, my mind is not working. It's basically just muscle memory. It's just muscle memory is going.
I can't imagine working those kind of, it's working 22 hours in a row. It's crazy. I can't imagine.
But it's quite memorable. And I think it really helps set and establish a good system. And when others see it happen around you, what happens is you inspire and motivate others to do the best. I think the idea is to motivate others to just excel. Forget the results, forget everything else, just excel in what you're trying to do. That really helps this pattern flow.
Now, when you're going to these countries and doing these very complicated anterior segment reconstructions, perhaps some transplantation, are you taking the donor tissue with you? How does that work?
So actually these countries did not have any donations available when I was operating. Only now one country is allowed it. Donations of any organ in that country was banned, all of them. So we used to actually get the corneas from US, from Cornea Gen, Miracle Foresight, and these people all helped at that point to send the corneas from there. And there were other countries like Sri Lanka, which used to send corneas out, which used to have surplus of corneas. But post-COVID, it became a real big nightmare because of the COVID situation in the US. All the COVID eyes were not being transplanted, so that demand just blew out of proportions and we didn't get anything in Africa. And then there was a whole wave of at least close to 12 months where there was no cornea work being done, at least substantial. A substantial dip in that. So that really impacted the cornea work. But we used to usually get corneas from outside. India, unfortunately, does not allow corneas to be exported out of India because of we have 1.5 billion population in this country. You first serve this country before it goes out at the thought process. But which is right in its own way.
For sure. So what's next for your big group of eye hospitals? So you said you want to grow from 160 to 250, which would be fantastic.
Right. That's in a number scale. Yeah, that's from a number scale. I definitely think at some point during this journey, the R&D, the research and development, is something we're very focused towards. We've already come out with one device called as the AVA. AVA is Advanced Vision Analyzer, and it's by the company called ELISAR, and that basically does a virtual perimetry. And we've been we've been scaling that up in India. We're now coming out with a very, very novel another novel piece from the same company, ELISAR, which is we're doing OCT and corneal image, retinal OCT and a cornea OCT at the same point of time. So it's a very, very, very intriguing and nice combination to have and to visualize it. We're still working on it, but yeah, when it comes out, hopefully it should come out soon. We'll know
That sounds
how it
amazing.
works.
I mean, I always think that, you know what, we're getting to the point now where I could probably remotely diagnose anything. So I don't have to see the patient. You can send me anterior segment photos. You can do whole eye, like you said, OCT. You can show me, send me a topography, a tomography. You can send me some biometry. You can say, you can diagnose everything without actually seeing the patient.
You don't really need to go anywhere. I think that's the beauty of technology, is that you really don't need to go anywhere to diagnose anything. It's all up here. It's all up here. It's all in your hands. You probably need a setup, like you have your office, which looks absolutely stunning, by the way. But you can have your office with an iPad on one side, another monitor, dual monitor, and just diagnose, hey, okay, this guy has 1, 2, 3, 4. Hey, this is what you got to do. And then boom, you're done.
Right, I think
At
we're gonna,
least,
yeah, I think we're gonna get
yeah,
there. I
we're
think
gonna.
even our clinics now we have so many different machines. Here's my autofractor, here's my topographer, here's my tomographer, here's my biometer, here's my OCT machine, here's my, can we combine all into just one machine that just scans your eye and gives me all the data?
You know that I used to think that really works today, but I'll tell everybody, because if they're watching this, they should know that actually disturbs the flow of the patient, and that's not beneficial for the doctor's office.
What do you
Because at
mean?
the doctor's office, if you have one patient going to on three different machines, you can have three patients being
Right.
analyzed and swivel them around. But if you have just one machine doing everything, then there's a block and there's a queue that's up there, which is just blocking the whole crowd from actually doing your workflow, completely gets hampered.
Right.
And
I get that.
yeah,
I get that.
so we've done that. That's why.
Then the solution, though, is of this magical all-in-one machine, just have like six of
You gotta have six of them, which doesn't come cheap in the beginning. You know that.
No, of course. Everything in
No.
ophthalmology is funny. It's very expensive.
Yeah,
Somehow.
definitely.
But I
Yeah,
think, yeah,
somehow.
it's interesting to see where this will all end up. I think it's because you look back, even I'm obviously older than you, but when I was a resident, I mean, there was no optical biometry. We sat there doing AppLination A scan with an ultrasound, and
Right,
things
right.
really
Yeah,
changed a lot.
things has changed, and I think we're just in the brink of the technology revolution. So we're just going to understand what AI is going to do for all of us right now. We have no idea where that's going to go. Good and bad both. No judgments on that right now. But I feel if used well, I think AI can be a big boon for all of us if used well. We just need to have the right people using it, which invariably happens to 99%. That will be the 1% which you have to just deal with that.
No, for sure. I mean, you take a story, the story of chess, and you look back 20 years or 25 years. 20 plus years ago, when IBM's Big Blue beat Kasparov in chess, it was like such a big deal. But now,
Yeah.
even it's not the Google chess player, right? Taught itself chess in a few hours, and now can
Right.
beat any human on the planet. And so I think we're going to get there, the same kind of concept, with some of the challenges with lens calculations or surgical planning or even diagnosis. You're going to have it. Even today, do you have AI that can look at a retinal image and tell you the patient's age within a year or two? You can
Yeah,
look at a
yeah,
retinal
yeah.
image, it can tell you male or female. I can't do that. If you show me a picture of a fundus of a retina, I can't tell you male or
You won't
female.
know.
But
No,
somehow the
you
machine
can't.
figured out. So
Yeah.
it's
I mean,
fascinating.
they're going to be able to do some things that we obviously don't do. But I do also believe there is a place for everybody. Like, I do not think that they'll be able to replicate surgery that well, especially the when it reaches even one level of complexity. I think it does have its own limitations. When there is something off about the case, there'll be a limitation
Yeah,
on it.
I think you're right.
So
You're
there will be a
100%.
place for everybody.
Yeah, in terms of, I'm working with a company now that does basically automated robotic cataract surgery. It's still in
Oh, wow.
development, very, very early. But you're right, the machine can do very well for a routine case.
Routine case. I agree. 100%.
But an unusual case, at this point at least, it's a little more of a challenge.
It's not a challenge. It's just time. It needs to learn for about 10 to 20 years what the challenges are. And it has to be taught that. And then, it's
Right.
a give and take. You keep giving it, then you take from it. You keep giving it, you take from it. And that's how I think AI usually functions. And if we do it any other way, or if we do it in a very fast manner, we will be ending up with some screw ups in that.
So where do you think we're going to be in the future when your kids are ready to go into ophthalmology, not orthopedics, ophthalmology? When your kids are ready, where do you think we'll be with all this?
Oh, for first up, I don't know if my kids are going to be in ophthalmology. It's completely their
Of
choice. I've
course.
left it up to them. I've left it up to them. But to any youngster who's watching and is, do you there has to be technology, without which there is no way you can get into this field of healthcare anymore.
Right.
You've got to be technologically savvy. You've got to be technologically up there and learning technology just as much as you're learning ophthalmology. I might be scaring people up, but I think the
Yeah.
people who can actually do this are the ones who are going to excel in the future. They are the
Absolutely.
ones who are going to go ahead and make path-breaking revolutionary changes that can benefit all of mankind. That's really where I see this going.
Yeah, no, for sure. You've got to embrace the change. You got to embrace the technology. You got to keep learning. You
You
can't keep
have
doing
to
things
keep
the
learning.
old-fashioned way. You got to keep progressing.
Yeah. Your old-fashioned ways are mainly for your emotional side, where you work hard, you keep learning, you open up your keep your opportunities open at all times. Those are virtues and characteristics that you can build up, but not the actual work that has to be done could change, right? You want to go
Right.
technology, you've got to be robust in surgery. You have to know what's happening around the world. You have to have knowledge coming in at some point or the other.
Well, I think that's something you're really good at because you travel to so many different countries for meetings. I mean, and no joke, in 2023, I probably saw you in like four or five different countries.
I could say the
Yeah, but
same
the
to
difference
you.
is,
But
you're young, you have to balance a family. Like my kids are grown up, they've left the house, they're their own adults, they don't even they live far from home. So it's easy for me. I have nothing but time.
I think I take a leaf out of what you said today. I love learning from others.
Right.
Age is not a boundary, and age does not matter to me. I love seeing and visualizing what they're doing. If I can learn even 1% from one conference, I'm done. I don't need more. I think
Right.
that 1%, if I can come back and implement in my, for example, I saw somebody who I operated with recently, not recently, about 4 or 5 years back. And I learned a small technique of a Wong incision. Now I'm
Right.
using it all the time. I call up friends like you and like Inderpal Singh, and I say, "Hey, teach me MIGS." So he teaches me MIGS. I'm really fortunate. I'm just damn plain lucky to be
Yeah.
at the right place at the right time with the right people to be able to ha take help from them. And everybody just so nice and lovely that they help. And when they help, it goes one step beyond, because they're not teaching you just the what the book or what YouTube will teach you, but they'll teach you the nuances of actually how to get
Right.
those cases, those tips and pearls which are there. So it's so each and every step of the way, it really benefits all of us if you're able to teach somebody else. And I was really lucky, to be honest.
Yeah, that's one of the my goals in Cataract Coach was to give away every secret, teach all the pearls, whatever little things I picked up along the way, I'm going to teach the world. I'm going to get that out there.
I'm not joking, Uday. You have left a mark in ophthalmology, which even today you don't understand what you're doing. To be honest, I don't think you do. So what's happening is a lot of people, even if they're not subscribing to your channel, they are watching it like a hawk.
No, for sure.
They are watching it like a hawk and they want to know. Today, we didn't have any of this. Just think about when we were learning surgery. We learned it based on what just one mentor was teaching. So
right.
That's it.
There is
nobody else. Now you have luxury of saying, hey, one day I'll pick up my YouTube and see cataract coach teach me. One day I will pick up and see what is Ashwin doing on World Webinar. Yeah. I will one day pick up the thread and say, what is Susan doing on that platform?
Sure.
I have so much luxury of content that's coming to me that I can use that content and start a base for myself.
Right.
Once I have given all my, I have a base ready. What are the concepts that I can believe in? What are the concepts that I can't believe in? And if somebody has good number of followers, that obviously means that person is doing something right in that space.
No, for sure. I'm like you. I watch probably an hour of surgical videos every day. I just love. I love to learn. I want to learn from everyone. So I subscribe to YouTube video channels. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if you look back, gosh, when I finished my residency in 2000, the only resource I had was the godfather, Bobby Osher. I would borrow his VHS videotapes and would watch those from. But you're right. It was hard to learn from many people.
I was so surprised when
I was a resident and they're teaching me surgery. They're teaching only retrobulbar anesthesia. They're teaching only divide and conquer. And then I went to a lecture at the ASCRS when I was a resident, and I saw this professor talking about topical anesthesia and phaco chop. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was magic. I'd never seen this before. And so, yeah, I think you're right. We got to keep learning. We got to keep advancing it. And the nice part is now you can learn from everyone. Now, tell me more about your worldwide webinar. That's a fantastic project you've got started with Conor Brava.
Yeah, this was COVID born actually. It was our COVID baby. It was born at a time where there was suddenly a flurry of small webinars coming everywhere. And Sergio and me were on one webinar and we just finished it and we just continued that call for a little bit. And we said, you know what? So much content being put there and so many people willing to put this content out there. Can we not get all of them to one place at one time to kind of make the whole world see what's happening? We just probably need to tell people in a better way where to be and why to be there. So all we did was we actually just started a Zoom link, which me and my little team in Chennai did. He did it from Brazil, where he was helping in the spreading the word. And once that happened, I don't know how it went so fast, so quick, that we didn't have enough. You know, we took the Zoom platform, and the Zoom platform has this limit of, you can say 1,000, 5,000, or 10,000, right? You can have number of viewers. Sure. So we took the 5,000 because we knew that many registrations were there. But we didn't anticipate what's going to happen. It actually broke it to about 12,000 people who we had to suddenly switch and move to a YouTube. We had to suddenly move to YouTube as well. So we had to mirror this onto a YouTube while the lectures are going on. It was quite nerve-wracking because people were messaging on the other side. They have, fortunately, few people had my WhatsApp and all had Sergio's WhatsApp, and they were constantly messaging saying, hey, we're not able to get in, we're not able to see anything. So we said, okay, here, you know what, we put it out on the website and saying, here's the new link, please go ahead and visualize it over there.
Right. Just YouTube streaming, you could have a million people then.
Correct. But we didn't know that beforehand, that we thought Zoom would be enough, right. But it was not, clearly. Well, that was the first year we started, and second year onwards, third year, it became a little low because there was a clear sign of webinitis.
I like that, webinitis.
They did not want to see any webinars. They said, done with it. I think all of us were there at that point of time, and we kind of recognized it. We've kind of pivoted now to a little bit smaller event, which is much more focused towards giving back to a focused, sort of an interactive one, rather than making it larger than life. And I think it really works. It really helps, this one. We'll still continue to do it. I feel we're going to do it in the next December. We did it in December this year, 2023. So in 24, we'll probably do it in December. It looks like to be the time where it's the lull of all the conferences. There's nothing happening during December. So we just try to map the timing correctly. So nobody feels offended. We don't want to step on anybody's toes. There's no requirement of doing that. We're just doing it for education. As you said, we're not doing it for any other need.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very high yield meeting. I mean, there's so much to learn, and it's just in just that short period of time, you can come away with incredible tips and tricks.
Yeah, and we hope to help.
No, I think that's a fantastic project. Do you have any other neat projects you got and working on? What other projects you got?
No, right now I'm not working on anything myself personally, but I'm quite intrigued with the studies. We're studying on some accommodating IOLs from the US. There are some other research projects that are quite intriguing. I'm quite fascinated by the way that people are thinking. There is another project from Israel, which I'm very quite keenly looking forward to implement, actually, not even just do research, because it's not a danger to anybody. It's more of a AI-based technology for slit lamp. It's really cool, something which we're working on. But we're just working with them. I don't know how far it's going to go, but I'm quite waiting for some results to come out and hopefully be able to share them at some level. And I already told you about the research project that we're doing in-house, internally. That's one. And always we hold our annual conference at Chennai. You've been there
for sure
already, and that's coming up in July. We're going for the winter meeting in Amritsar. So those are small, the smaller events that are happening. Quite looking forward to Brascaris 2024
in Rio de Janeiro. For sure, that's the Brazilian catarrhophractive meeting. What an amazing meeting. Wow.
That's a fabulous meeting. Also going to go this year to the Canadian Ophthalmology Society meeting. Fantastic. So that'll be interesting as well. I've said no to quite a few because I've also had the fortune of having a new baby. Which is
congratulations.
So I'm just spending some time at home with them, with the new baby at home. My older ones are becoming big, so they're going out of commission from around me.
I have to ask, because I think all ophthalmologists do this. I did this. When my kids were born, I got to check their eyes.
So, yeah, we did that. I made them check each other's eyes, actually, both my elder ones.
No, but even the babies, when the baby's born, I'm just like, you learn so much in ophthalmology. Like, I still remember doing my pediatric rotations in ophthalmology and seeing a baby with retinoblastoma. So it makes like, oh my gosh, or babies with congenital cataracts. I was like, when my kids are born, like, I got to check their eyes. I have to check.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it makes it, you're always on the edge when you're doing that, by the way. So.
Right. My family thought I was crazy. Like, what are you checking? They're fine. Don't worry about it. I'm like, no, I have to check. No, well, what a blessing to have a new baby. That's fantastic. But then it's tough to balance it, though. I mean, with the amount of travel you're doing surgeries in Africa. You're obviously working very hard there in your home. You're at so many meetings. That's a tough task. You must have a blessed family life to be able to do all that.
I have a blessed wife for sure, who's allowed me to do all of this stuff. And I also must say that if you're good at something, don't stop, because you don't know when that sudden calling will come from top and say, hey, stop. You'll be told to stop. And so I'm a very firm believer of, just keep doing it till you can. The only reason being, there is nobody else who can replace you in what you're doing. in that specialty, in that focus, in that manner. And when I go to conferences, to be honest, Uday, I get a lot of this, oh, you're so young, and how are you able to do this? I get that a lot, and which is a really good thing. Why I say that is because I feel that a lot of people knowingly, unknowingly get inspired by that and want to excel in their field, and they want to do better. They want to be able to say, hey, you know what? I can do this if he can do it. I'm more of the guy next door who can really, hey, if he can do it, I can do it. I hope I'm able to exude that confidence in people. And I think that is one of the reasons why I go, and one of the reasons why I want to go and teach. Teaching is not something that comes easy to everybody, but when you've got it and you can speak with some clarity and you can understand a concept and 101 that concept laid out in front of an audience, it's not an easy game for everybody to do. Everybody gets into the technicality of it. Let's just dummify this first, explain it, because on a podium for 7 minutes, you can only dummify and explain. You cannot go into the nuances. If you go into nuances, and these things, it gets difficult to explain to people every time. You don't go into the technicality, just explain the concept. If people
Keep it
understand the
simple.
concept, they'll come back and ask you. And that's where they'll know, because nobody's going to learn surgery by just looking at you, but they can know whom to look for when they want to do that surgery. So nowadays I get a lot of requests on online. I get a lot of requests online. Hey, can you tell me? Okay, I'll do it. Let's get on a call. Let's do it. I'll get on a call with them and I help them step by step over there. Okay, this is the patient, this is what you gotta do. Do this, come back to me and tell me. So there's a very it's a give and take relationship with a lot of people. I think that really helps.
I think you bring a very important point, which is, when you're on the podium for 7 minutes, just keep it simple, get across the idea, put the idea in someone's head. Like, I still remember learning about fourth row pupilloplasty and pinhole pupilloplasty, and I just put the thought in my mind, like, okay, that's a possibility. And then in the a month later, 6 months later, when I had a patient, like, I got it, I want to do. I know this. I saw this technique. I don't know enough about it. Let me go now research online and learn the nuances.
Uday, everybody wants to do whatever procedure you want to teach them. They want to do it their way.
Of course.
Never make it your procedure for them. That's why we're very clear, at least Dad and me are very clear. We never put our name on any procedure. It doesn't matter to us. The
Right.
procedure will have the name of the, or a
Procedure.
catchy line from something of the procedure. It should not have Agarwal's procedure. And people might say it, but we really don't even, I really don't care about it. It doesn't matter to us. What really matters is that procedure should stick, and that procedure should become, it should help somebody, right? It should help somebody in actually implementing in their field, in their ORs. How can they actually do it? Obviously, some procedures are much tougher, so they don't do it. Like, for example, if I teach somebody, and it's not even tougher, it's probably tougher to get the instruments and the things. So for example, gluteal is done rampantly in India. And I know this from a statistical standpoint, okay? But it's not done at all, or maybe very negligible numbers in the US. And what I found the difference is not that the procedure, it's simple. People don't want to open a vitrectomy pack. And they do not want to do buy the Tisil glue. These are the two reasons why they don't want to do it. Simple, simple. Why are we doing Yamani? Because there's no vitrectomy. You can just put needles and take it out. It's just the thought process.
But I
And
mean,
here you can do it.
in the US, though, I mean, some of the expenses are crazy. Like,
Yeah,
if
I
I
agree with it.
in my surgery center, Trypan blue dye costs $66 for one patient.
Yeah, see, so there is no way, there's no way to point a finger and say, why are you not doing it? Why? So I like to tell people, do what comes best to you. And that means logistical, that means skill set, that your own skill set,
Take
that
everything,
means your
yeah, for sure.
consumable. Yeah, put your consumables, what comes best to you. It's just not about what you feel, it's about what you're also getting around you. Even the knowledge. If you don't have somebody around you who's doing Blue Dart, how will you be able to execute that at a high scale? And that's simply how I look at
Well, I'll tell you, I'm still in favor of glued IOL. I've seen many papers
it.
now with if the you know sometimes the Amani is done and the surgeons are leaving the flanges just under the conjunctiva and they just erode through. You have to get those flanges within the scope. The beauty of glued IOL is the haptic
It's always stuck in.
is 100% within the sclera. There's zero chance of erosion or perforating through the conjunct. Nothing, no issue.
Yeah. So the way I look at and the analogy I'll give for this is gluteal is tougher to do, but is easier to manage in the long run.
Sure.
Yamane is easier to do, but tougher to manage in the long run.
Right.
And it causes a tilt, it has those erosions, so things
Right.
like that. But gluteal on the other side is tougher to do. You have to make a flap, you have to do open the conjunctiva, you have to do a sclerotomy, you have to put you do anterior vitrectomy. So obviously it's tougher to do.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. And I'm not going to be someone who's going to defend the ease or difficulty of doing something.
Right, no, for sure. But I think long-term results, you'll end up having a much nicer result.
For sure. For sure. We've got enough and more studies on that front that have proven the tilt and the just the simple tilt and the flanges and the number of times you have to explant and a Yamane is just insane. And I've not had to explant even probably have to had to explant just two gluteals in
Right.
the past maybe 8 years. I've not done any explant. All of them have.
You're very
Once
stable.
it's done, it's through.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's my
You might
experience
have
as well.
some dislodges. Yeah, you might have some dislodges in once in a while, but that's probably once in 4 years, once in 3 years. Yeah.
Where do you think we're going with the future of ophthalmology? What are we going to get in, let's say, the future of cataract surgery? You said that you're obviously doing some projects with some accommodating IOLs. Hopefully, we'll get that. What else do you think is coming down the road for us?
I know for a fact that people are working a lot on the AI front from a clinician standpoint, future of ophthalmology side. From a clinician standpoint, I do not see all of us clinicians doing a lot of clinical work, even in the next 5, maybe 7 years. I feel it'll suddenly see
What
a
do you
big
mean?
plummet because you're going to have devices that are going to be helping you in diagnosing.
Oh,
So
sure.
you don't really need to sit behind a slit lamp and actually diagnose it. Your AI system can actually do a lot of it for you. You only need to confirm it, probably. And that also will eventually go away. That is number one. You still are going to definitely need surgery. So surgeons are going to be around for a long time. I do believe that personally. Because, I mean, you can train a robot how to pick up an airport from a particular location, but let's say this airport is moving around,
Tougher.
it's going to be very, very tough. And this is something that I picked up from Elon Musk. He said it in one of his interviews as well. You can train a robot to pick up and build a whole car from scratch, no problem. But you cannot train a robot to catch a ball so easily. You
Oh,
throw a
yeah.
ball at him, you'll not be able to catch it so easily.
Little tough.
Although that's also coming in, I do believe that what the project you just spoke about, the robotic, is quite fascinating, and I think I'll be very, very excited for something like that to happen. We all have to use technology. I do believe technology is a huge element of the future. We are at the brink of technology revolution, so we should not confuse ourselves and say that this won't happen, and we should not deflect or neglect that conversation. We should actually have that conversation face to face so we can actually teach the younger, hey, get on board, let's learn together. And
Right. Oh, for sure. And listen, especially in ophthalmology, the only constant is change.
it's
It's
change.
always changing. It's
No,
always evolving. Always
always changing.
the next step. No, for
Always
sure.
changing. And you should, I mean, simple thing that most advisors would tell you, follow the money. The money is following the AI world right now, and everything around the AI is predominantly around manufacturing or healthcare. So if I look at it from that perspective.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right.
Google spending on it. So, and you know, all of them, Microsoft, Google, all of these guys are either spending it on this or that. Yeah. So yeah, it's somewhere in that mix where I feel the future of ophthalmology lies. And we've just got to get on with it. We've got to get on the saddle.
Yeah, it'll be so interesting to see what happens. I mean, it's like I'm actually a little bit sad. I'm lamenting the fact that I'm now mid-career. I'm 23 years, 24 years into practice. I'm like, oh my goodness, where did the years
but
go?
But Uday, you're learning so much more than all the so many people that I know who are way younger than you and who should actually be much more in the learning spree right now. But you're learning so much more. So I don't think you're in any way mid. Don't talk to me about age when it comes to this. When it comes to just learning age, you're still at probably 19.
Oh, in my dreams. But no, I think the important part is that I do have a passion for learning. I always want to learn more. I want to see, like I said, I watch an hour of surgical videos every day, not my own, other people's. I want to learn more and more from everyone else out there. So it's fascinating. Well, Ashwin, thank you so much for doing this podcast. I really enjoyed talking. You're an incredible inspiration for me. I love, love, love your teachings. I think you're an incredible teacher. I hope you'll give us a video that I can show the day after your podcast of any kind of interesting case. And
I will.
Thank you.
I will definitely dub that and send it away to you.
Oh, fantastic. And I'm sure I'll see you in a meeting very, very soon.
Very soon. For sure. ASCRS, mostly.
Yeah, in fact, at ASCRS, we're going to have, again, our cataract coach, the best of cataract coach session. The last two ASCRSs, it was standing, they gave me bigger and bigger rooms. It was literally lying out the door. So this year, they've agreed to give me the biggest room they have for the cataract coach session.
Wow.
So
congratulations to them.
Yeah, we're going to have a fun time. There's no way.
That is just purely hard work that you have put in, and you deserve every bit of it.
Oh, it's, you know, honestly, it's just fun learning. And as you, if you've been to the last couple cataract coach courses at this ASCRS, you'll notice that it's mostly I have my panelists making fun of me for doing the wrong thing. The best way to learn.
That's actually funny, actually. It's so lively. It keeps it live. Well, and also we learn. At the end of the day, we also learn, end up learning what we're seeing and watching. So that's great.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing you very soon, Ashwin. Again, thank you. What a pleasure.
And welcome to India again in March. I know you're coming down, so. Welcome.
For the All India Ophthalmology Symposium. I'll be there for sure. Thank you. Okay. Right. I want to tell our listeners and our viewers, remember, we got a new Cataract Coach podcast every single week. Amazing stuff. You can find it here on cataractcoach.com, on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, Google, wherever you find your podcast. It's everywhere. Instagram too. Check it out. We'll see you guys next week.